Hello, House of Pod family. This is Kaveh. Before we get to the show, I have a quick disclaimer. We use some salty language in the intro. So, you know, if you're listening with kids around, why? You probably shouldn't ever for the show. But some episodes might be a little bit worse than others. This is one of those. Don't have them listen to this first part. We are talking about some adult topics in the beginning. Sorry, we didn't mean to. It just sort of happened. We never planned for that sort of thing. Anyways, stay tuned. And welcome back to the House of Pod. Cha-cha-cha-cha. I was thinking of a new theme song.
It was pretty good.
It's a work in progress.
I didn't like the cha-cha-chas. The rest sounded like a nice commercial jingle. So maybe that'll be our second, third, fourth career as a commercial jingle writer. It's just like that TV show. Everywhere you go, everywhere.
There's a heart. There's a heart. Hey, let's do that. I could be a great ad man. Give me a product. I'm going to give you a jingle for it. Just name any product.
Mm-hmm. Coffee mugs.
Coffee mugs. Get one now. Try another one. Try another one.
Bookshelves.
Bookshelves. You need one.
Now. Okay.
I'm two for two. Go. Keep going. Okay. This is good.
Yeah. Cool. Okay. Vodka.
Give me like a brand, like a name.
Oh, sorry. Okay. Patagonia.
Respect the process here. Patagonia. Sorry, Patagonia vodka. Patagonia no. Vodka. You need one now.
Yours is creative. This is mind blowing. I'm really enjoying this. Stay tuned, listeners, for another 45 minutes of that.
Really going to commit to this bit and just
make kidding.
Just do it.
I have a question for you.
Yeah.
At work in the last few weeks, it's happened three times now where somebody, you know, when we do colonoscopies and upper endoscopies, a lot of patients ask, are you videoing this process? And, you know, we always say no, because I assume it's a storage issue. I don't actually know, or a litigation issue. Hmm. Like, it's just too much information.
Probably storage. That's a lot storage. Of data. And we do so many.
Yeah. You know, so we take a few photos that represent, you know, how clean the prep is and the markers that we find in the colon and the stomach and during our procedures that, you know, not a lot of things are identifiable, but we try to do a good representation, right? And when, you know, a patient's moving or bleeding, you get that one photo that you're like, yes, that's amazing. So twice now, again, three times, sorry, in the last couple weeks, I've heard people at work say, yeah, there's the money shot. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And I look at them and I say, I feel like that might be unprofessional to say at work in a room full of colleagues and also a patient who is sedated to some extent, but whatever, we all know that patients can hear and remember and might be recording what we say. And both doctors, one was a doctor, one was a nurse, turned to me and said, why is that unprofessional, Lizzie? And then I had to, then we turn, you know, I'm talking about professionalism and being unprofessional. Then I had to tell them about porn. So is your experience at Money Shot, would you use Money Shot at work? And can you tell our listeners, when I say Money Shot, what is the first thing that comes to your mind?
Okay, so you're alluding to the fact that the Money Shot is the one scene in a pornographic movie where the man's ejaculate is seen. That's the Money Shot. That's where the saying comes from, we think.
You are correct, but in my naivete, to be fair, I just thought Money Shot was like a part of a porn, and I actually thought it was the woman, like the centerfold. I thought it doesn't matter, but yes, I thought
that's
money.
Horrible that that's what you thought the money.
I
shot.
Thought it was the centerfold. It is adorable, but I'm just saying, no matter what, I was right to think that it was nudity and porn and sexually, you know, related.
Okay, so while you have been talking about this, I pulled up Money Shot on Wikipedia. By the way, yes, it's a weird thing to say, but I think it's used so much in colloquial terms now that it's past that point where we could use it. But let's go to the root of it. A money shot is a moving or stationary visual element of a film, video, television broadcast, or print publication that is disproportionately expensive to produce. That doesn't sound right either. Okay. Oh, then it goes down. Yeah. Then it goes down to pornographic film, and underneath it says, this is the name for a cum shot in pornographic film. Sorry. Parental advisory on this episode, obviously.
Yeah.
Referring to the ejaculation scene as the money shot.
So I guess you could look at it in two different ways. There is this other meaning where they say like it's just because it's really expensive to produce. And then the meaning that people are really alluding to, which is like that's the shot everyone's been waiting for.
Right. So, and again, when we talk about the most expensive to produce, it's really the implication is the most important scene in the movie, the most important shot, right? Because that's where you're putting all your money in. Mm-hmm. And that is how people are using it at work. And they're using it very innocently. And here I come, tainting, pissing, if you will, golden showering, if you will, all over their kind gestures and rooting for one another to say, yes, nice, that's the money shot. And I'm all like, that is inappropriate. Please stop it.
So let me ask you, did you actually mean that or were you just trying to mess with them?
I didn't actually realize that. I thought money shot, when you said it, the most common thing to anybody's mind would be porn. I just, that's what I assumed. And so I said it to them. I'm like, you know, when the nurse said it in the room with me, I was like, oh, I probably wouldn't say that. And she was like, why? And then we had a whole conversation. So now again, I'm probably going to get fired. No,
there's a lot of,
I really did think it was an inappropriate thing to maybe say in front of a patient who was sedated, for example.
I guess, I don't know. There's so many phrases out there where there are these, we learn these deeper connotations to them that do have worse connotations than this one. Like this one, I'm not that offended by porn in general, so I'm not offended by it.
Right.
But there are sayings like rule of thumb. Like, you know where that saying comes from?
No.
So there was an old timey rule that a man could beat his wife with a rod as long as it was no thicker than the width of his thumb. That's where the rule of thumb comes from, supposedly. So there's a bunch of these things.
I didn't know that.
Yeah. And so those, I'm like, okay, I can see why that's not good. And I, you know, I'm creative enough to use other, you know, words and other phrases.
Right.
And I'm not a big fan of like phrases in general. Like, you know, when people say stuff like, oh, let's put up a flagpole and see what everyone else thinks. I'm really stuck between a rock and a hard place. I never liked those things anyways, but I can, I can definitely live without those. This one just doesn't, I mean, even if you do get to the root of it, I'm like, so?
Yeah, that's true. I think the term is idioms, where you're like kind of making nonsensical comparisons. A dummy.
Yeah.
Okay. No, idioms. But you're right, I guess. You know, I have to say then the conversation did start going off into like, is porn okay? You know, what is quote unquote a healthy dose? Is there a healthy dose? You know, and I start talking about how I think all like teenage boys and a lot of men use to some extent, I did think that was quote unquote normal. I'm sure every person is different. And then the question was like, well, what about women? And I'm like, okay, yeah, women too. But I think women prefer battery operated objects, but who knows? I don't know.
We talked about this a little bit with our episode with Jenna McKay. We talked about how like there's probably a very distinct line between normal use, whether or not it's like you said, good or not, normal use and like unhealthy use or dangerous use. And it's probably like the same way with like video games, right? Like if you have a kid who doesn't like video games at all, there might be something kind of weird about that. He might be an outlier. But if you have a kid who's like insanely into video games and all he wants to do is play like first action, violent shooter games, and that's all that they want to do, there might be something wrong with that too. So it's to me, that's probably where it's at. There's probably some degree of normal use.
There's just, it's called moderation. And I wouldn't be able to say that all porn is wrong and bad. There are types of porn. And we can all agree that like pedophilia, you know, kid porn or whatever is like unacceptable 100% of the time, but there's gradations of a lot of this stuff of just regular adult porn. And I don't know how to classify it any other way, but the point is that money shot, I guess, is not so terrible, and I should apologize for it. It was a fun conversation, like, you know, it became a funny thing. Nobody felt scolded or judged because we had a real conversation about it. But I didn't know that it was something that we could use that went beyond porn at this point. I thought it started off as something innocent and then it became porn, and I thought it was only porn.
No, I think it's used pretty commonly now, but you know who won't use inappropriate phrases at work, I don't think, although I don't know how firefighters are really, is our next guest. He is the fire captain at Palo Alto, at the Palo Alto Fire Department. His name is Hugo Godoy. He's been on multiple strike teams, and he's been fighting all the fires here in Northern California. And we're really excited to have him on, and really excited to hear what's happening from a firefighter's perspective. So stay tuned. And as always, make sure you follow us on Twitter at The House of Pod. You can also find us at Facebook and Instagram. Like us, rate us on iTunes. Thank you to Nadim for help with production. And anyone else you want to thank?
No.
All right. Stay tuned. All right. Welcome back. Today we have Hugo Godoy. He is a fire captain at the Palo Alto Fire Department. He's been a member of multiple strike teams. We'll learn about that. And we think it's a really important time to have a firefighter on the show because, as many of you guys may know, in California, it's been a pretty epically bad fire season. And we're really appreciative, and we'll just say right at the top of the show that we really appreciate everything you've been doing. Lizzie and I complain a lot about the air quality we've been dealing with in San Francisco, but I mean, you are the one really dealing with it. So we're really grateful that you're on the show today. Thanks for coming on.
Thank you very much for having me.
Yeah. Thank you so much. Can you tell us a little bit about the background of like a firefighter, like for you, what made you want to do it? What's the path that maybe the majority of firefighters take, or maybe there's no path that's set for any one person, but for you, how did it all start?
For me, I at first I wanted to be in that kind of some kind of public service. I always wanted to help people, and obviously one of the ones I kind of went mainstream was being a police officer, kind of the public interaction. Then I did a ride along, and then I got hook, line, and sinker to be a firefighter. Became a paid call, and then for the last 20 plus years now, even greater now, I think we're going 30 years now of people I've known being paid call, becoming career firefighters. I became a paramedic, so I'm also a paramedic firefighter, and did that for years. Now I'm a captain. So now what we do is supervise a couple other people. I'm still a licensed paramedic in the state of California. I think the biggest thing was, you know, knowing that you want to deal with the public and being in somebody's worst day of their lives. And the way we look at it in the fire service and probably any kind of emergency services kind, somebody's worst day ever, is that's when you call us. We come and we try to solve your problems that day and make it, or at least try to make them better. You know, and that's what we do in emergency services, and being a firefighter especially, we always say you have nobody else to call, you call us. Even the cops call us. You know, they have nobody else to call. Who do we call? Let's call firefighters, and here we are. What do you guys need? You know, and I've actually been into the emergency room before, where the doctors are like, hey, we have nowhere to go with this kind of incident, which we kind of be hard to describe on the podcast. We've been on those kind of calls, and we had somebody on the crew who goes, hey, I can solve that for you. So,
Was it something up a rectum? Because we can solve that for you.
No, it was something around the penis.
They needed like the cutters, like bolt cutters or something.
It was definitely different. And I mean, you know, one guy's like, ding, I know what to do, and went to work, and everybody's like, oh my God, wow. And I mean, that's the great thing about the fire service, is it's a team approach. It's not one person who's got all the answers. We all kind of get like, okay, let's hold on for 1 second. We all get collectively together. Blah, blah, blah. Okay, here's the plan.
Your problem solvers.
Yes, exactly. That's a perfect way to put it.
Well, I won't ask what it was around that guy's penis, but you probably can't tell for HIPAA laws. But
yeah.
I'll just imagine that it was a cock ring gone horribly wrong.
With spikes.
So that's your story of how you became a firefighter. You sounds like you started pretty early, got into it pretty quickly, and you've been doing it for a long time. I've lived in California essentially my whole life. Mm-hmm. I have always known about fire season, and I've seen it getting progressively worse. In the last 3 to 5 years, it seems like it's gotten tremendously worse. Is that just my imagination, or is it really getting worse? Does every year seem to be worse than the last?
That's our literally our joke in the fire service. This is the worst fire season ever. We look at it, well, this is the worst fire season ever, and we keep being right. And it is. It is absolutely crazy what has happened in the last 20 years. I don't have the exact answer of who, what, when, where, why, but it is. And for us in the fire service and public safety, we have to get ready for next year.
Yeah.
Right. And you're saying you're working longer and longer, and it's harder and harder. And every year you're right, you know, it sounds like 2020 really has been landmark year for unfortunately so many things.
Yeah, I'm sorry. And in the fire service, not just that. I mean, we had to deal with COVID too, which is a brand new thing for us. We have the cold and flu season. We have our, you know, potential patients that have issues that we have to gown up for. And those are pretty rare. Like we have flu season, let's say. So we take a little precautionary times throughout that time of year. You know, now it's COVID. And I was like, whoa, we've been going hardcore since February now, you know, now we're like fire season on top of it. It's definitely different.
So the morale of firefighters, do you think it's holding steady, or do you think that
It is. We're holding strong. We know we depend a lot on each other. We're there for each other. And that's one great thing is you're not sitting in an office by yourself or working by yourself. There's always somebody. And then we always look back. You know, as us old timers look back and go like, hey, remember when you're trying to get hired, you're trying to get on, probably as you two were at one time trying to get into medical school, right? Yeah. Remember that? And it's just like, okay, wait a second. Maybe it isn't that bad. Mm-hmm. You know, it's like, what am I complaining about? Stop for a second. Yeah. We don't have to have that. It's really not that bad.
At the same time, I mean, you have a really emotionally taxing and physically taxing job. And like you said, on top of everything else that's happening, this fire season and COVID, all these extra stresses, what systems are in place to help firefighters deal with that? You guys, aside from just each other, aside from talking to each other, is there systems in place to help you sort of manage these stresses?
We do. I'm very fortunate to be in the city of Palo Alto, where they do have a very strong support system. We have a critical incident stress debriefing. So whether it's a critical call we went on that very second, or it's something where I got back after 17 days at the Creek Fire, a couple of days later, I got a phone call going, hey, man, you okay? Because I know that was a stressful time. Just being away from your family for 17 days, and I have an 11-year-old daughter at home. Like, daddy, you know, it's just like melt your heart, right? And it's just like you have those stresses on you besides, you know, thank God nothing broke at home, where she's like, oh, hey, we got a pipe broken at home, right? And it's like, oh, lucky me. We have that just emotional stress of what I saw at that fire, I'm not going to talk to about it to anybody about.
You guys have mandatory mental health check-ins. Is that?
Yeah. If somebody calls me, go, hey, you okay, man? You know, and it's one of my other coworkers, and they kind of figure out with it, like, oh no, I'm really good with him. Let me give him a call. Hey, you okay? You can call, you know, you can call me anytime, you know, and it's the brotherhood/sisterhood that we have within the fire service that goes like, hey, I got your back anytime. Call me 24 hours a day. You know, that's one thing I'm very privileged to have.
And speaking of like this brotherhood and sisterhood, maybe I don't know if our listeners know, but I think it's about 20% or more of firefighters in California come from our prison population. So from inmates. Can you tell us what it's like working with those folks? And now I think Gavin Newsom just signed a bill saying that they can get paid more and that they can also get kind of a job, sort of a transition, if you will, that before they weren't really given a resume. It meant nothing, but now there's like a credit that goes forward. What is it like working with inmates on the fires?
So the inmate crews, we call them con crews, those guys were, we really didn't work like side by side for them. They kind of work a little bit separate to us. And we, you know, we see them back at base camp or whatever, but we really rarely interacted with them. But I'll tell you one thing, those guys, the work they do was absolutely incredible. Those guys, what they do is what's called cutting line or creating a line through a forest or chaparral or whatever you want to create, dirt, there's forest in a way. Those guys would go through there and clear cut whatever size you want in whatever conditions that I couldn't even, you know, half the time like going, how do those guys do it? Mm-hmm. And I think that it is something deserved. You know, those guys are actually looking maybe back at their past going like, hey, I'm doing something wrong and I can do something right now. And I think it is something, you know, in a whole different subject, I'm sure we could get into our whole prison system is, you know, a lot of the guys are in there and they come out and they have nothing. And they spend all that time in prison. And I was like, what do? I serve my time, but I have nothing to put on my resume. I just, you know, that, you know, you have a blank slate of time in your resume and you're actually a great person, you know, but that doesn't do you any good. And I think start for mm-hmm. that. I think we need more of that.
So it sounds like you have a pretty positive outlook on them coming to work with you once they finish their term. Now they can actually get a job as a firefighter.
There are some great opportunities for those guys to come out there, especially in the urban interface. Those guys are in it day in and out. I'm in the city guy. I'm in the city 90%, 99% of the time. The 1% I go out is on these strike teams. I train for them. I go out there. But these guys train all year round to. And those guys can be really, really important and functional. And these are the guys who can come through there and clear cut stuff away from your home in no time. Or
well, since you mentioned it, can you explain to our listeners what a strike team is and what they do?
Okay, for a strike team is usually what is each city will provide 1 to 2 fire engines, so 4 people. And a total of 5 engines from multiple municipalities. So for me, I was what's called a strike team leader, a supervisor. All of us would get together and we would go out as a team. Usually it's 21 of us and we'd go out there and we'd function as one team, but we're all from different agencies in the same county. That's what a strike team is. So this year got really crazy. We called rainbow strike teams. We get people from, they call it different counties. You have anybody, you have one person from, let's say, one city. You call another county, you have this other city, you have other, and you actually get 5 together, but they're completely different.
It sounds like an all-star team, right? You're getting like one exactly. person from different teams.
Oh, we're just getting everybody together, and we go out there, and I've done it 3 different times, and usually it's, we really... get to know each other really well and work with other people, which is always the exciting part of our job.
So, you know, the fires clearly aren't going away, which is super sad to think about. Just Oregon itself is like, I think maybe worse off than California. Yeah. So what advice do you have for our listeners, for people whose homes are at risk? Like what can people do to help you and to help themselves?
Listen to your local, whoever your fire district is, whether it's Cal Fire or if you're up in Oregon, whoever your county fire marshal is, to take heed their advice. To if they say clear 100 feet, they'll be more than happy to come and inspect your property. And the thing is with that is it helps us when there is a fire and it's coming down the line. It makes our job easier, but it helps us protect your home. We want you to prepare. We want you to help us.
Yeah,
and that's what we want to do. We want to help you. We don't want to leave no home behind. Mm-hmm. We want to save everybody's home out there. And the way to do that is we need help. I can't do it by myself. My crew and me and the rest of my team can't do it by ourselves. You know, that we need your help. Everybody needs to do their part.
Yeah, what you guys have to do and see I suspect a daily basis at this point in the game is must be intense. Just like no matter what you do, I imagine, no matter how hard you work, no matter, I'm sure there's lots of times when someone prepares everything really well and they've done all the clearing around their house they need to, even then you probably see some really bad stuff. I'm sure you see tragedy hit all the time, particularly these years, this last 5 years, it seems like. How are you dealing with that? You doing okay with that?
Yeah, you know, it comes and goes. I'll think about it. And there's a couple of homes, you know, we were just at and you're like, oh, it was fine. And something happened, the wind changed. It was fine the day before. And we got what happens on usually once you get settled into the strike teams, you get work 24 hours on, 24 hours off, rest time. And, you know, what happened was we were on a 24 hours on, we were doing things. And then we had the 24 hours off and all of a sudden you hear like, hey, the wind changed. and we lost that house. And you're like, oh my God, really? We worked so hard. You know, we were there. If we could have spent, what was the other group? You know, just there's so many ifs and ifs or buts, but it is very frustrating to know little wind change can change everything. Because, you know, you go back to what we were talking about earlier about, you know, it's like the forest and what, and there's so much undergrowth that these fires go through, and it's called a dirty burn. It doesn't burn all the way through the 3 or 4 feet of duff that's sitting there, and it just burns the top layer. And the wind changes, and there's still fuel there. And you think it's burnt, and it isn't. And it's just like, you know, just fresh gasoline being poured out there. And it's just, there is no home, you know, and it is out there. And not to get political or whatever, but it's like, you know, they talk about rake your forest and all that, or, you know, whatever he said. And it's just kind of like, well, you know, there's something to be said about the 100 feet around your house.
There has to be some personal, that makes sense. I mean, yeah, there's always argument of how much the state is responsible for, how much federally there's a responsibility for clearing. But, and it sounds like a lot of it is federal that needs to be held responsible for that. But regardless of your house, it sounds like everyone has to sort of take that into account. Everyone at that urban interface you're talking about has to really be mindful of that. Because at the end of the day, it's not about pointing fingers, like I think you mentioned before. It's about, you know, preparing yourself as well as you can.
Yeah. We're here right now. I don't know how to, you know, who cares how we got here? We got to move forward. And because that's the time, tomorrow's going to come. That's what I did today. I look at the weather every day, the next 15 days, and it's going to be 90 degrees. And again, you know, 90 to 100 degrees, and you're like scratching your head, like, okay, east winds are coming again, guys. It's you know, and I'm already thinking fire. You know, okay, what are we doing here?
Yeah,
we're, you know, I'm,
it's getting hotter every year. It's gonna continue to get worse. What is the fire department doing? How can you prepare for that? How can you prepare for the future at this point? Is it about hiring more people? Is it about getting the word out more? What can you do?
I think a lot of it for me is education. How do you get people out? You know, each municipality is different, Cal Fire, but then with the whole COVID thing, we're all in our own little mess in many ways when it comes to now, you know, we're providing tax dollars to provide the fire service. We're having cuts in my department, severe cuts for the first time in our history. Mm. So you have to look at taking care of yourselves and preparing you and your family and having a plan.
Yeah.
And that's, we're going to come back to, you know, everybody, let's have a plan together. We'll get up there as soon as we can, but we're, you know, it might be a while.
You know, you're talking about like budget cuts, and that's a scary thing. And it makes me think immediately about, you know, the election and all this talk about defunding the police. Do you feel like there is a lot of throwback or any sort of, let's say, shade being thrown on the firefighters, or you personally, or your department, or your, you know, your brotherhood, your sisterhood, because of a lot of the controversy going on with police departments and the talk of defund police? Do you feel part of that, some of that anger or hostility?
No, not at all. No, we definitely, I felt more during the mortgage crisis. I actually felt more, you know, almost a few times I felt like it was my fault. You know, the way people would talk to us is like, you know, it's like, whoa, what do you mean? Because I have a job, or I have a pension, or, you know, I sit there and it's like, as a firefighter, and, you know, we had people take food out of our carts in the grocery.
Wow.
I'm not buying this for you. It's like, that came out, you know, we buy that out of our own pockets. You know, we shop every day, and that comes out of our own pockets.
So back in like 2008, when the market crashed, people were able, because you're a public employee, I guess, right? And people were able to get a hold of your what you're being paid.
Yeah.
And they were holding that against you. Wow, that's crazy.
Yes. Yeah. It was, you know, it still affects me. It still bothers me today. It's like, you know, it's like I work 17 days straight. You know, now it's time in the seat. It's like, it's not like, you know, I got to, you know, beachfront, sit by the pool, and, you know, or order cocktails or something like that. It's, you know, it's like 20, they would say it's 24 hours on, 24 hours off. But reality was, I worked my 24 hours off, and usually the relief is about 4 hours delayed, and then we get to the base camp, then we clean our rigs, and then by the time we got really to decompress about 3 o'clock in the afternoon, after being up for all night, 24 hours a day. And you guys were residents back in the day and doing your residency and your eyes hurting and burning. And you're like, I just want 5 minutes to close my eyes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, and I just want that peace and quiet for 5 minutes.
Yeah.
And something comes across our radio and you're like, really? Yeah. Come on. Yeah, you know, and you're just like, yeah, that's time in the, and I say that's time in the seat.
Well,
yeah,
it sounds like you guys are not immune to politics, and it sounds like you guys have to deal with some strange angst at times. But I have to say, we are so grateful for everything you do. You know, Lizzie and I mentioned at the top of the show, complain about the air quality in Northern California quite a bit. And at the same time, we know that we're privileged because we're safe, and we're safe in large part because of the efforts of you and your friends and you guys putting your bodies on the line for the rest of the people in the state. So I really appreciate that. Want to share that with you and let you know how much we appreciate that. Thank you so much for coming on, telling us all the stuff. If there's anything you want to leave our listeners with, what would it be?
I would just say be involved, stay involved, you know, and whether it's in politics, fire prevention, you know, stay involved in your local community. If you have a vacation home up somewhere, call up that fire district and go, hey, what can I do to make my home better? How can I help you? And then, you know, whether it's a local fire association in those areas or your local union, go, hey, how can I help you guys get the word out and to make sure I'm protected?
Right.
So when I call 911, somebody shows up at my door. Because I don't think I would think that's the worst when nobody shows up after you called 911. I just think that's, you know, I grew up in a third world country and I didn't have 911. And it's just, I would say that is now growing, you know, being here for so many years, I couldn't even imagine you call 911 and nobody show up.
Yeah.
I mean, that was just, stay involved. And it's, I know it's hard because it's, all of us are busy. We all have careers, we all have families, but we all need to stay involved in our communities, in our city councils and our county supervisors and all that, and make sure our voices are heard. So at the end of the day, it's probably the right time. Vote.
Yeah, that's a great way to close out the episode. Yeah. Hugo, thank you so much for everything you're
doing.
Thank
you, guys. Appreciate
you coming on.
Appreciate it. Yeah, thank you very much. You guys have a great evening. We'll see you guys next time.
You want to try one more that's just really quick?
Fuck yeah.
This podcast is not a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Please consult a physician or other qualified healthcare provider for your specific healthcare needs or concerns. The opinions expressed on this podcast do not represent the opinions of our employees. Details in the podcast have been changed so that patient identification is not possible. And I'm alive.